From ACB Radio Mainstream, welcome to Tuesday Topics. For the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to blind and visually impaired people. And now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Good evening and welcome again to Tuesday Topics. I'm Paul Edwards in, well, dark Miami, Florida, but it was a very sunny, rainless day here during the rainy season, so it was a very pleasant day. Our producer, Brian Charlson, is not with us tonight. He has forsaken us for the sake of basketball, so that's sort of sad, but basketball takes precedence over AOL, I suppose, on occasion. Our faithful recorder, editor, Steve Bauer in Kansas is with us this evening, and as usual, doing a yeoman job of making Tuesday Topics palatable once it actually gets on to ACB Radio. And of course, I'd like to thank George Byes of Talking Communities for making the software we use on Tuesday Topics available to us. Without the software from Talking Communities, Tuesday Topics wouldn't happen. Our guest this evening has been with us once before when we talked about a committee that he was a part of. But tonight we're actually going to talk about a company and their new offering. And that company is AOL, a company that's well known in the blind community. And certainly in the past, it was well known for how inaccessible it was purported to be by those of us who were blind, and how mindless of our needs the company was. That situation has changed, as I think you'll see. And as we get into things a little bit, our guest, Brad Hodges, will, I'm sure, be talking a good deal about the changes that have occurred with AOL. Brad, I'm assuming you probably go back as far as I do anyway in terms of this issue. So perhaps we could just spend a few minutes painting a historical backdrop for folks. There was a time when AOL was not popular with people who are blind, and perhaps you could talk a little about that and a little about what happened as a result of it.
Well, thank you, Paul. AOL, early on, we all remember the AOL client, which was inaccessible. Things moved along and time progressed, and we've all moved now to using Internet Explorer. So AOL is competing with many other services, MSN, Google, and other similar services, and everybody is using Internet Explorer. And so that, in some respects, leveled the playing field because we moved from these special programs and applications that AOL and CompuServe and the others were using to more standardized, primarily the HTML, hypertext markup language, protocol, and conventions that we now think of as working through Internet Explorer and Firefox.
So just to tag on to the thought, do you think that the movement towards web-based email is going to be pretty absolute? I mean, do you see mail clients that don't operate directly with Internet Explorer eventually going away?
Not as one would think of it. What I see happening is there is just a proliferation of ways to get email. So you have two parts of the task. You've got the email itself, which lives somewhere on a server, and then you've got the way you want to interact with that. So think of a person with a Braille note or a Pac-Mate. Sometimes they're using that. Sometimes they're using a laptop on the road. Sometimes they're using a desktop. Today I've looked at email on Outlook. I've looked at email on a web browser, just depending where I was in my process. So we have all these different ways of looking at our email. So I think what's happening is we are adding to the different ways we can look at email, and then by default, the Outlook Express or Eudora or Outlook will become less common just as a percentage of the way people look at their email.
Why are people using webmail? I mean, you know, Microsoft Outlook works pretty well. Blind people, for the most part, like it. What makes people suddenly use webmail?
The price. It's free. You've got to look at their ads with your eyes in order to use their free mail. And the best way for them to get their ads in front of people is via something that's very visual, namely the web. Now, of course, you get ads on the messages if you use Outlook or Outlook Express. But compared to opening www.mail.aol.com, that's a lot easier than trying to configure an Outlook account for a lot of people.
Okay, fair enough. But I think that one of the factors that has limited blind people's uses of webmail has been that there's certainly a perception that webmail is A, not really easy to use, and B, not always very accessible. How would you respond to that?
I think it's absolutely the case. And many email services and many webmail, what we call a webmail client, that's the web page that you look at the mail with, many of those are very inhospitable, just in terms of their sheer complexity, as well as the downright inaccessible characteristics of many of them. People really trumpeted Google Mail or Gmail when they first introduced the what they called the basic HTML. I was shocked, frankly, by the excitement and enthusiasm among blind people. I thought personally, and this is my own thinking, it was dreadful. It was hacky. It wasn't very well formatted. You really couldn't navigate through it particularly efficiently in comparison to Outlook or Outlook Express or Eudora. Yet people were all quite smitten with it. So there's also perception, and that, you know, perception is 90% of the game often.
We did a survey a couple of years ago at my college of what were then available clients, and Gmail was just rearing its head. And in fact was really only available in a beta version. I'll learn to talk. And one of the things that we found was that probably the oldest was the easiest to use. And so for the most part, for our visually impaired clients, we actually recommended Hotmail over Yahoo or Gmail or any of the other web-based email clients that were out there. But now AOL has come onto the scene with AOL Webmail 2. Is that different from the run-of-the-mill webmail clients, either in terms of what it offers or in terms of what it offers to blind people? In terms of, I'll learn to talk.
Thanks, Paul. Yes, I believe it does. And let me be very clear. I still prefer to use a regular email client. If I had my druthers, I prefer to use Outlook Express, but I operate on a minimum of 3 computers and sometimes upwards of half a dozen computers in any given reasonable period of time. And that is not a practical reality in many cases, because you can't have some email on each and every computer. So all of that being said, the concept behind the AOL Webmail as an example is this idea that we're going to make a piece of software that comes to us from the web feel more like a desktop. So, for example, in that program, you can do Control-Alt-R to reply, or Control-Alt-N for a new mail, or Control-Alt-M to check your mail, and that's starting to sound and feel more like Outlook or Eudora than arrowing around and navigating in a web page. We have these shortcuts. We have keystrokes. So all of a sudden, there's kind of a marriage between the web and a piece of software like Outlook Express. And that is where the new AOL Mail comes into focus as the first of its kind application that really does that in a useful way for blind folks.
And was this interface consciously designed to be of use to people who were limited to keyboard access?
Yes, I believe so, and I think a great deal of effort went into it. But I think also, though, that to the extent that companies can provide all of the functionality of a regular piece of software in these Web 2.0 applications, this is what we're talking about now, people are going to be happier with them. Because if you have people who are used to a way of dealing with their software and they're using a Web 2.0 application and they can't deal with their software in that same way or those same patterns, they're going to be unhappy. And I think organizations like Google and Yahoo and AOL are acutely aware of this.
Just so we're all on the same page, can you describe for us what a Web 2.0 application is?
I'll try. As we all think about the web, we generally think about Internet Explorer and Firefox, and we generally think about using our screen reader's keys to navigate around the screen. Okay, we have, in the case of JAWS, Forms mode, and in the case of Window Eyes, MSAA mode. So that when we are interacting with the screen and the web page, we're really pretty much using our screen reader to steer around the page, navigate, look at things, and then interact with objects. We can do things like checkboxes and lists, but if we want to get into the page with the, let's say, the edit box for your name when you log on, you've got to go into the page and do that, and then leave and come back and use these arrow keys and such and move around. In a Web 2.0 application, you can have a piece of software in the memory brought to you on the web that looks and feels much more like a piece of Windows software. And that's going back to my comments earlier about the key commands. So they can have things like shortcut keys, as you would have in a Windows application, but they're working through a web interface. And that is an example of what Web 2.0 is. Technically, it's a whole set of tools and objects that designers and developers can use and push down the web, push down the net toward you, and have them interact with you while you're using the page, and then they go away when you leave the page.
Without going too deeply into the whys and wherefores of 2.0, would I be correct in saying that that ability is actually driven by what amount to JavaScript applets and the successor of JavaScript applets? And having said that, I guess I would say that those of us who are blind have been brought up to think of JavaScript as sort of the enemy rather than as a friend. So does Web 2.0 kind of change this relationship?
I think Web 2.0 can change the relationship. It brings into play several new players, chiefly the AJAX environment, of which IBM is a contributor through a language and a set of tools called Dojo, and something called ARIA, which is Accessible Rich Internet Application. And these tools have accessibility built in many cases. So the designer uses a widget, and that widget is accessible, so when it's implemented, it works right away. And that's the tack that the folks from IBM are taking in working with AJAX. And so that's a very exciting development. Let me give you an example of that. We have a web page, and we want the stock value for, AOL.com to be displayed, but we don't want to refresh the whole page. There's a little widget you can use that'll do that and keep updating and changing that. And if those little widgets are accessible, which many of them are, then all of a sudden we've got accessibility when they're implemented. Whereas with some of the earlier efforts like JavaScript, you had to go in and make each of the things accessible on your own. And so if accessibility comes along for the ride, then we're going to be doing better. And that's what's starting to happen with some of these widgets and tools that the designers are going to use to create the Web 2.0 applications.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, Web 2.0 is essentially a whole new approach to the web that is being championed by many of the bigger players in the game. And with this effort, they are, in a very real sense, making the needs of computer users with disabilities a core value of this new approach to web applications. Would you agree with that?
Yes, but I would parse my agreement, Paul. We want to put them in line in the order in which they are out in front. AOL and IBM are out in front. I think the other big players need to look to AOL and IBM to understand what can be done and what should be done. I don't know what's happening specifically in the Java environment. There's a Microsoft product called Silverlight, and certainly the Flash environment and the new Flash add-on that was announced a while back, I think are very large, open, and important question marks.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. Silverlight is certainly a very sad thing for a lot of blind people. All of us who are baseball fanatics and who use MLB.com, we actually did a program where we found some workarounds to enable blind people to effectively install Silverlight, but I still don't know of anyone who's found a way to do such things as adjust the volume on it. So I certainly understand where you're coming from, and there are an awful lot of people in April and May of this year for whom Silverlight is not a happy thing. Now we have an understanding of the background into which AOL dropped its webmail application. And did AOL actually have a web-based email client prior to this, or did they just operate with their regular email client?
No, they have had a webmail client for some time. I want to be careful in saying that I do not know how far back that goes. I do know that it, while not perfect, it was usable, and I think no less usable than a lot of other webmail clients. Quite frankly, Paul, you referenced Hotmail earlier, and I don't know when that was. You know, they changed the appearance on Hotmail. I swear to God, like most people change our socks, it's Tuesday. What's the interface going to look like? That's kind of an editorial view on my part. Sharing housing with someone who's constantly frustrated by the changes in Hotmail, a sighted person. But be that as it may, that AOL webmail client was usable earlier, and they've refined it. It's been 6 months or more, I would say, since that started.
But what they were able to do was to harness some of the characteristics of 2.0, and while updating their webmail, they consciously made an effort to incorporate an ability for screen reader users to utilize hotkey commands within a webmail environment that have traditionally not at all been available in webmail clients. So as you suggest, that actually bridges the gap between webmail clients and more traditional clients like Eudora and Outlook and Outlook Express. I know that AOL does have an accessibility area. Has AFB actually interacted with folks at AOL to provide them with feedback with regard to the development of this product or the usability of the product?
Paul, I'm very pleased that AOL and AFB have dialogued extensively about this subject, and in fact, I'm also very pleased that AFB Tech, with support from AOL, will be present at the consumer conventions of the national organizations of blind people this summer, and on the Monday evening of the ACB convention, we're going to be having our AFB Info Expo at the headquarters hotel in Louisville at the Galt House for the ACB convention, and we'll be talking about this in more detail along with some of our other technology efforts. And so, yes, AOL has been very active in its outreach to AFB and to other individuals and organizations to really understand not just the technical ins and outs, but to really make this usable. They've got three important things going, I think, as we said. They have the keystrokes and the key commands. They have a good basic design. And then right on the web page itself, they have a list of the key commands, a table with the key commands, and you can turn those on, turn those off, and read them and learn them as you wish. And so I think all the way around, from the technical and usability standpoint, they've done a bang-up job.
Has there been much discussion with AOL about the current iteration of their regular email program, not their webmail program, with AFB? And I actually ask this question with some malice of forethought, because at least three or four people with whom I've spoken over the past few months say that there was a kind of a continuous improvement graph that went on at AOL until last year when version 9.3 was introduced. And most people that I've talked to say that that version of their regular email client was actually a huge step backwards in terms of its accessibility, in that it now suddenly took more keystrokes to do things that you could do pretty intuitively before. So did you guys talk with them at all about 9.3 or other changes that they're making to their regular email client?
I haven't talked with them specifically about that. I don't think I'm talking out of school when I say that Tom and his group are acutely aware that AOL is a huge entity and organization that produces many, many software products and services, and he understands full well that they cannot make every one of them accessible at the same level as they've achieved with the webmail. So there has to be a prioritization. I think if you were to ask the AOL folks, they would tell you that just wasn't something they could put the resource into. And I believe the analysis went something like this. You can use a conventional mail program, Eudora, Outlook, Outlook Express, Perch, other mail programs, and you can access the AOL mail servers, and the instructions are available online. And I think rather than trying to make another email client that would work, since there were already three to choose from at least, they would focus on the webmail product and some other projects as well. And I think that's the metric that they probably looked at.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you are listening to Tuesday Topics. If you have comments about the show or a suggestion of a topic you would like to have discussed, send a message to TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. That's TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. Once again, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Let me go ahead and open it up to some of the folks who have hung with us, and please remember to tell us who you are and where you're from.
Hello, Brad. This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I understand that system access is involved with Web 2.0. Are you aware of that, or do you know anything about it?
Well, I think system access, if folks haven't tried it, I would encourage folks to go to SATOGO.com. We were talking about programs that come to you on the web. That's a splendid example. That's also my understanding, Gary. I think system access is, generally speaking, a very forward-looking effort, and I believe that we would find interesting and useful things coming out of the whole Web 2.0 arena having to do with system access, and I'm going to be real anxious to see what those are, and I suspect that we'll all enjoy some of that.
Yes, this is Pam Drake in Visalia, California. Oftentimes, one of our relatives, Dave's mother, tends to get very confused with AOL, and she wants to know, what did I do wrong? Why is this happening? Why is that happening? Is there a way with the improved accessibility that we would be able to log on with her or remotely with her and see what she, if she would give us her password, of course, that we could see what she's doing? Is that at all a possibility? And thank you.
Well, I don't know of a way to do that while she is on the computer, but yes, that's one of the advantages of the webmail. If she is willing to share her password information and she thinks she's had a problem, if she logs off and you, in your location there, log on, you could go and look at the mail, make changes if she wants things, you know, cleaned up, erased, deleted, etc. You could do that and then log off, sign off, and she could go back on again. Absolutely.
Hi, this is Monica. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, and I appreciate the presentation that you've been doing tonight. I don't have a question so much as a comment. I'm going through the sign-up process to see what it looks like, and one of the things that I don't think we touched on is that with their new email, AOL has a very, very nice CAPTCHA system. It is there, but there's audio CAPTCHA, and it's very clear and easy to hear. It's not some of the jumbled-up background where you're trying to hear and never can quite figure it out. So I wanted to let you know that I appreciate you mentioning this, and I'm very impressed.
I will certainly pass that along to Tom and the group from AOL, but I would encourage everybody here to sign up and try it and provide feedback. We at AFB Tech look at and evaluate technology. You know, we're not working for AOL. AOL isn't, you know, a customer of ours. We just think that right now this is an outstanding example of what can happen, what should happen, how things optimally would be, and we are very concerned when things are not as they should be, and we're clear in our concern about that to the public and to those companies. And at the same time, we want to be equally clear when we think things are going well and when the product is accessible and really usable.
And of course, one of the advantages of webmail is that if it's sort of interesting, but if you combine it with System Access to Go, one of the advantages of using AOL webmail is that you can walk up to any computer anywhere and look at email, which is not something that it would be easy to do with Outlook or Outlook Express, where you're typically going to have to install something like JAWS or something else. Has AFB Tech done any testing to see how AOL webmail works with note takers?
No, we have not. My prediction is that because the note takers rely on the Pocket IE technology, I believe all of them, except for Braille Plus and Icon, my hunch is that they are not going to work with these interfaces in the same way as our desktop technology would, and I also believe that that would be the same for sighted people. One of the big drivers behind accessible web design these days is the fact that an accessible page will display very nicely on a mobile device. And inaccessible pages tend to do poorly on mobile devices, particularly those with Microsoft mobile browsers. And so I think that we have a ways to go before the Microsoft Pocket IE technology is ready for this.
The interesting thing is, though, if we're right, and I think we are, that more and more people are using mobile technology, the probability is we're actually going to see pages that, as an unintended consequence, are actually going to be more usable by mainstream screen readers as well, because in order to make them fully available to mobile devices, one of the things that typically has to happen is the range of graphics has to be cut back and the text has to be presented in a more organized and displayable way. Would you agree that the large-scale deployment of mobile technology is probably going to end up having a good effect for those of us who are blind or visually impaired?
Yes, Paul, without question. Let me cite a couple of examples. I was sitting across the table in a restaurant from someone using a Pocket IE on a Windows Trio 750 phone, which at the time was the hot ticket item to have, and we were looking to go find a Honda dealership in Columbus, Ohio, went to Honda USA, and the page completely fell apart. And I said, I bet when I get home with my screen reader, it's going to be a jumble of code. And sure enough, it was. It's not just graphics and text. The Pocket browsers have to divide the page up into 3, 4, even 5 pieces so that it can be seen on the little screen, and the browser has to know what order those pieces should be displayed in, what's the first part of the information, then the next, all the way down to the last part of the page. And if there's a lack of structure, as in HondaUSA.com, why, it has no clue, and so you get this jumble, and it's not usable. And I'm sure Honda spent a good dollar designing that web page and didn't intend that we would go to Chrysler in disgust instead, which is what we ended up doing. We went and looked at the Chrysler page and went and looked at a Chrysler that day instead of a Honda. So that's a real concrete example of what happens when they miss the boat with their structure.
This is Monica again. I see two features that would be, I would think, very useful to a blind user for AOL. One is that it can send mail to your cell phone, and many of us do have talking cell phones. The other is that there is a wizard that will help you copy over mail from your former webmail service, including your address book. Brad, do you know if that transfer wizard is accessible as well?
Monica, I do not know if it is. My hunch is that it would be, although it may not be quite at the same level of usefulness or usability as the other, but I couldn't say for sure. So it might be, if you're an adventuresome soul, it might be an interesting report back for folks on what your experience has been. With that, the other thing I would also say is that I particularly like the way you can deal with distributions, distribution lists, adding and editing them. I find to be a real snap with the client.
And we should probably say that most of the time, webmail clients don't actually include an ability to create distribution lists at all, which is an indication of just how much of an amalgam between the traditional email client and a webmail client this one is. While I have the mic and a moment, let me remind listeners that this is Tuesday Topics, and also mention that you can contact us by email by sending a note to us at TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. Let me ask one more question, and then I'll open it again for others. Brad, in terms of the collaboration between AOL and AFB Tech, that's a great thing, and it's certainly the kind of thing that we in the blindness community would obviously want to encourage insofar as we can. Why aren't other companies jumping on the bandwagon to work collaboratively with AFB, and what do you suppose might encourage more of them to do it?
You know, I think that each company who is considering and working with accessibility chooses a path in that company's view meets its needs. We are engaged, I think, very successfully with a number of companies on a number of levels. I am pleased with and proud of the interaction we've had with AOL, along with many other organizations, and I'd encourage everybody to read Access World. You will very often see the fruits of our collaborative efforts there. I think my colleague Darren Burton and the work that he has spearheaded with Canon USA in terms of refining and implementing the accessibility and the copiers they have is another example. There are blood glucose meters that we have had an opportunity to work with the company and share our insight and help improve and strengthen the accessibility. As to why others haven't done it, boy, I think that's one of the great questions, not just from a selfish point of view. We'd all like our organizations to do well and people to respect them. But I think the larger question, of course, is why doesn't everybody take accessibility as seriously? And if we could figure out how to switch the perspective, then we will have something really going. It's that tipping point, I suspect.
One of the other buzzwords of 2006 to 2008 in the kind of accessibility world is universal design. Do you think that the words Web 2.0 and universal design can be or should be said together?
No, I can define Web 2.0. I haven't the faintest idea what universal design means. I understand that. Mike Shabanek from Apple got up and claimed that the iPhone was designed using universal design principles. So no, please don't, let's not utter them in the same breath.
Do you see the current legislation, and this is a little off topic maybe, having, and by the current legislation, I'm talking about the bill that's being introduced in the House by Representative Markey, and which is putting a few more teeth in 255 and 508. Do you see that as having a potentially positive impact on 2.0 development, or do you see it managing to drive more companies into defensive postures?
I think those companies that want to be driven into defensive postures are going to be I think the exciting thing that we have is we have an intersection of examples such as AOL and the work IBM is doing and increased expectations in the marquee legislation. So no one can really, with a straight face, claim that it can't be done, because there are companies out ahead of the curve showing exactly how it can be done. There are companies that have the tools that bring accessibility along to a very high level when you use those tools in the ways that they're intended to be used. Now, the fact that all companies' tools aren't yet like that, to me, isn't a reason to not have this legislation. So the tools are available. There are companies that are showing that it can be done. And then we say, okay, in the light of all of this, it is reasonable to raise the expectations and to apply higher standards, since it's demonstrated that those standards can be met.
I'm going to digress for a second because I want to be sure that we don't run out of time before I give you an opportunity to do this. There may be some of our listeners who are not aware of what Access World is, and we talked about it very briefly earlier. Could you tell folks what it is and then tell them where they can go to get it and how much it costs?
It's available free of charge through afb.org. Look for the Access World link. And I have the great pleasure and honor of being a contributor to Access World. Jay Leventhal in New York is our editor-in-chief. My colleagues Darren Burton and Lee Huffman, along with some other frequent freelance contributors, help, I think, make Access World a very strong publication. I think we enjoy a reputation for fairness, even-handedness, and rigor in what we say and in how we evaluate and assess the current state of affairs. And so I encourage everybody to go to afb.org and read it and enjoy it. Dialogue with us. Let us know what you think. If you think we're full of hot air, let us know that. If you think we're doing a good job, let us know that too.
Access World comes out every 2 months, and in the months when Access World does not come out, there is an email publication called Access World Extra. And when you do sign up for Access World, you get the Access World Extra in your email, and you also get an email notification when the new issues of Access World come out. So it's not only actually that, but it also provides you with the table of contents and usually makes it impossible for you to do anything else but go and look at Access World right away, because of the fact that there's almost always something in that table of contents that piques one's interest in a very serious way. The other point that it seems to me might be worth making is that there are very few functions that blind people can't perform these days. You may not always be able to do it with the first program you try or the first workaround you attempt to use. But if you're prepared to work at it and continually think out of the box, there are very few things that a blind person might want to do with technology that can't be done. Would you agree with that, Brad?
I think that's fairly accurate. I would put two bookmarks around that statement, if I can mix metaphors here. The first is there are certainly arenas where technology changes have shut us out, and I don't think there's any more glaring example of that than real estate. The history of blind people, of course, shows that there have been successful realtors predating computers completely, which I dare say is most of the history of real estate in this country. Computers early on gave blind people a tremendous level playing field. We could get at data on a pretty equal basis with sighted folks. Then the technology changed almost overnight, and blind people have now been very much shut out of that field. So that is an example of a field where blind people have been hurt by technology. Secondly, if we have specific programs or environments that we must use by virtue of our field or our employment, and we do not have the option for workarounds, then it becomes a very high-stakes affair, and we can be shut out. So if you are working for a financial institution and you have been using an accessible package, or the package they have has been made accessible, and that package changes overnight and you have no option, then you are done. The same can be said for people in the telemarketing field and customer service. Early on, many blind people found very rewarding employment in those fields. Then technology changed. Technology changes mean inaccessibility. Inaccessibility means unemployment. So we can also, of course, experience those situations, and they're far too frequent and they're far too real for many of us.
Brad, this is Monica again. You made a comment that I really like. You suggested that people use AOL Mail and then provide feedback. One of the things that I'm finding as someone who uses the web for business is that many, many times a developer isn't shutting us out because they intended to. It's because they really don't know what is shutting us out. And one thing that I'm finding is really helping a lot is when I write a letter to someone that has a site that's easy to use, and I say things like, I like the way you use headings because I can navigate easily. I like that you have alt text on your graphic links so that I know what I'm clicking. And that lets them know what they're doing right. It's important to point out when we need help. I'm not saying that it isn't. I'm just saying on the flip side, if we let people know we're out there, we're paying attention, and we like this stuff, that gets a lot more attention, especially since people are used to getting complaints. When they get a praise letter, they tend to keep them and even reread them.
Monica, I agree, and I think, of course, that needs to be in balance, as I think we've said before. In my experience, it also can reinforce the guys wearing the white hats inside of an organization. Very often inside an organization, the dynamic and politic of the web design and the web presence for that organization is far from harmonious. And you can have factions and philosophies at conflict within an organization. I can name you literally some of the largest business organizations in the world that I know of struggled to bring uniformity and consistency from very separate web activities that sort of sprung up over the years. And it was an enormous, enormous sort of cataclysmic corporate activity to wrestle this all into line. And those letters and that commentary helps those who want to have the web behave in the way we want it to, hold those letters up and say, here, 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 see what it's doing? We're on the right path. We've got to do it this way. And that helps that.
I absolutely agree with that, but I'm going to take a step backwards and take at least slight issue with you with regard to your response to the point that I made. And I agree largely with what you said. I guess my concern is, and maybe I'm just not in the place where I'm seeing it, but my concern is that I don't think that most of the people who could or should are making nearly as much of an effort as they can or could to get problems solved when components are inaccessible. And when real efforts are made to find ways of getting those problems solved, they often can be. And let me provide a couple of examples. We were at a place, as you suggest, in the telemarketing business where blind people were making a good living as telemarketers using computers. And then we went through a phase where many of those blind people lost their positions. Why did they lose their positions? And I certainly changing software was part of it, but it was also, I think, that many times the individuals who were in those positions didn't have the ability to make the adjustments that it was possible to make with the software that they had, like JAWS or Window Eyes. I would say that probably 70 or 75% of JAWS users probably would find it difficult to label a graphic, even though that's a relatively easy thing to do. They simply aren't minded to do it and never really learn how. More than that, my experience has been that agencies for the blind have not done a good job of spending their dollars to think in a forward-looking way about developing an interface with the company that leads to macro employment and that justifies the expenditure on scripting and on other approaches that can turn a product from being inaccessible to being accessible. And third but last, one of the things that's happened over the past few years is that telemarketing has come back into vogue in the blindness field. One of the reasons that's happened, I think, is because of the work of NIB, who has subcontracted with a number of telephone systems and which has also required them, in order to meet the rule they've got to follow, that 70% of the folks who are working in these jobs are blind or visually impaired. They've had to expend some fairly substantial dollars to find and introduce usable interfaces. So I guess my issue is, are we blaming technology for failures of the system and for other factors that really don't directly relate to the technology itself?
I take it that's a yes or no question, Paul. I completely agree with everything you said. I don't think we have issue here at all. And that's, I want to hasten to add, when I said what I said about having more access before to more information, that assumes that we can pick and choose where and how and when we go get that information and from which trees we get the information. I think the telemarketing, we could talk all night about that, but I think it's all, Paul, it's all of the things you very clearly and artfully suggest. There are many more forces intertwined in a much more complex sort of nexus than ever before. Clearly, the fact that technology needs to bring together client information from many types of databases and typically does that in an HTML interface increases exponentially the number of complications and the opportunities for inaccessibility. Some of those could be easily solved, and some of those could be only solved with huge recreations of systems. I think what you said about agencies is absolutely the case as well. So there's enough reasons to go around.
Yeah, and by the way, I truly do believe that you're right, that there certainly have been situations where technology has gotten in the way of progress, and I would certainly not at all deny that that's the case. I guess my frustration in looking at so many cases of this in the public sector and in the private sector both is that the blindness community has still not made a determination that they're going to fight these things when they can. And so often, I think if we hold people's feet to the fire and make them do the right thing, we'll end up preserving jobs and making them adopt technology that's appropriate. I work for a college in the state of Florida, and I think I'm regarded as something of a gadfly in that I'm constantly pushing for the college to give me and others with at least some expertise in the field an ability to look at and comment on software before it is actually purchased for use in the college. And if we could just get that to happen most of the time, I think we would be about 60 or 70% towards solving the problem because of the fact that I think by virtue of the huge diversity of software that's out there and the huge range of choices that we can make in terms of the software we purchase for doing virtually any task you care to mention, I think that it is fairly likely that we can steer, if we're given the opportunity, people away from adopting software that is inaccessible towards adopting software that is, which will have the net effect of encouraging those companies that get marginalized to take accessibility more seriously, which they often don't now.
My email is bhodges, B-H-O-D, GES@AFB.net. That's bhodges@AFB.net. And I would be very interested to chat with everybody. Certainly I'm inviting folks to email me. I think a whole host of things come to mind. We want to always, I think, be extremely careful when we start attributing certain effects and causes to blindness. We need to really pick those things apart very carefully, I think. Obviously, if this is something that is happening, we want to communicate this to the developers of our technology. I would expect that a screen reading program that I use would convey the necessary textual information to me. If I need to know what the font size and layout is in my Word document so that I comply with my company's style sheet, I need to know that. If I want to be able to communicate effectively with a chat client in the manner that others are communicating with that chat client, I similarly expect my screen reader to convey that information to me and to be able to use that chat client conveniently so I don't have to do multiple keystrokes in some kind of a difficult and cumbersome way. So I think that's what I have. Paul, I believe that this is exactly what 2.0 means in the respect that this is interesting, it's complex, and it's far outside, I think, what we've typically thought of before as a technology discussion. And I think that is generally the sort of nature of Web 2.0. It's taking us far outside what we've thought of as the web. Thanks.
Paul, I take your comments well. I understand that it can be a pain to try to keep up with this stuff. I would only say this. I know that you work in a college, and I have great respect for your public presentation. And I am pretty sure that you don't show up to give a public speech at your college in a Hawaiian t-shirt and, you know, flamboyant shorts, because it's just not the right setting. I basically, what I'm saying is that in instant messaging and in places like Twitter and on blogs, using the symbols is kind of sort of like wearing the right suit for the right job. I'm not saying that blind people are bad because they don't use them. I'm just saying it's a dimension I don't think blind people know about. I've made a Firefox dictionary, which I would be happy to share with anybody, that has a lot of these emoticons, these little graphics, to tell you what they are as you're reading along, and you could copy it over and use it for Internet Explorer as well. I certainly don't want it to seem that I'm putting any blind people down. I'm not. I just am saying there's more out there.
Just a tiny footnote to what Monica just said. In the last week, I have been researching it, and I have come up with, through Google and other places, over 5,000 different textual emotion character sets that people use. So that's just a little footnote.
Let me be really clear with everyone. And when I was talking about the way I respond to things, I was simply being open and honest about the degree to which I think I approach this whole issue with a degree of prejudice, and probably not in the most constructive or appropriate way. I think there is an awful lot that needs to be researched, and I don't think it only has to do with Web 2.0. I think, if you'll excuse the term, Web 2.0, in the way that we're talking about it, has become a millennial issue as well. And I am certainly beginning to have glimmerings of understanding that there is a fundamental difference between the way that I communicate as a person who is older and the way kids who were kids in the 1980s communicate. And I think that there's probably a good deal of difference between the way, or perhaps even a greater degree of difference, between the way that blind people in the 80s and beyond age group communicate with the way that their fellows communicate, because graphics and gesture and emotion and consensus are so much more a part of communication now than they were before. And I think younger blind people have perhaps not done as good a job of being integrated into that communications mode if they were blind. And I think that's directly related to mainstreaming, but that's another topic. We are actually approaching the end. Let me give Brad an opportunity to perhaps share with us a final thought on Web 2.0, the magical mystery Web 2.0, and then we will wind down for this evening. But I'd like to thank everyone for being here. Mr. Brad, final thoughts.
It's been a great conversation, and I want to let folks know that I think I've come away with a whole lot more than I was able to contribute, and thanks also very much.
Thank you as well. I think that our conversation has ranged far, which is appropriate when we're talking about Web 2.0, which isn't so much a set of standards as it is a state of mind, which isn't so much a set of technical specifications as it is a new vision of what the web can be and how people can be involved in it. When people speak of 2.0, they don't talk in terms of ways of creating more accessibility. They talk in terms of inviting larger numbers into the community. And I think that's an indication of just how complex the way that we communicate about the internet has become. I'd like to thank everyone for listening this evening, and I'd like to thank our guest, Brad Hodges. Remember, you can email us at TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. And remember as well, when we lose sight of the fact that change happens, we lose sight. Good night.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday at 1 hour Universal. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. That's ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each program begins, those who are online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room software. An announcement about the show, including information about the topic and the guest speaker, will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends List. So we hope you will come and join us each week on Tuesday, when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. We'll look for you in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. Tuesday Topics is a production of ACB Radio Mainstream.